Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies.
The Brothers Anderson are...
This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. You must try a Tucson or a threesome. You find your conscience bothers you much less. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1995 thriller Copycat, directed by John Amiel and starring Sigourney Weaver, Holly Hunter, Dermot Mulroney, and Harry Connick Jr. But first, let me do a little housekeeping on my end. This is the first podcast in, 2 weeks, I think. My father-in-law passed away. And so as a result, we haven't been recording the last week and then 2 weeks for Drew. So life kind of got in the way and the Tiptoes podcast was all I could put out for this last week. But at least we're keeping current with the at least one a week schedule, which I'm happy about. But it means that unlike some of the other episodes where they were recorded a month before they were put out, this one will come out in about 5 days.
A little bit of pressure, but not much.
No, it's okay. This one's a good one, because I happen to like this movie quite a bit.
Me too. And I think we may have seen it in the theater together.
I think we may have, yeah. Yep, it's about right. Yeah, so that's my only housekeeping. It's funny, the movie Drew and I are going to record this week, which would give me some cushion for next week, is actually a part of our Halloween thing. So... Although I'll probably edit it right away.
You can't use it.
We still have to kind of keep up. Yeah. So anyway, it's weird to have the cupboard being bare for the first time in a while.
Sometimes it's good to start back at zero.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I actually got rid of all of my backup files on my laptop that I record this on for all the episodes that have been already recorded. So that was kind of fun.
I will say back to housekeeping, actually. Props to the now entirely legit Dr. Travis Wonders. He graduated Saturday, a major accomplishment milestone in his life, and very proud and amazed at his substantial 11 years of college. So good for him. So he's been here since Friday. So last night, it was just him and I yesterday. We were kind of hanging around the house, and after going grocery shopping and Fred Meyer Bakery has started selling pretzels, soft pretzels. You know, I'm a carboholic, so I got pretzels. And we had a fairly substantial lunch. And so for snack, I said, you know, we're going to sit down, we're going to watch Copycat and have a snack. And so have this pretzel. And then neither of us wanted dinner because we're just like carb overload. So I think we just kind of vegged all that long. But we stumbled on Netflix. We watched Tig. Which is the Tig Notaro documentary.
Oh, yeah. I have not seen it, but I really like her.
Highly recommend it. 5 stars. I highly recommend it.
Well, plus, you guys share the C. diff issue.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. It's an hour and a half long, so it's not a huge investment of time. It's funny. It's sad. It's gut-wrenching. And it's hilarious. And it's it's pretty amazing. So I highly recommend it. So if you have a good 90 minutes where you want to kind of have some moods and you like Tignataro, and I do, then I highly recommend it. So
excellent. Excellent. Not, and this isn't a tit for tat thing, but while I'm thinking about it, I do have a recommendation too. This is kind of an oversight on my part, but I'm trying to go back and watch some of the, classic movies that I hadn't seen to this point. I've had more time to watch movies, but less time to talk about them recently. So I watched, among many, many other movies, Catch 22. Have you ever seen that movie?
I have not.
It is really worth seeing, and it is super dark, but it has a cast, an all-star cast. Every single person you will recognize.
Yeah, it's not available for streaming.
Yeah, well, it should go on your list at some point to watch because it's really worthwhile and it actually holds up pretty well too.
It's funny. So I look at on Netflix, Catch 22, titles related to Catch 22, MASH.
Yeah, I got that to watch too, but didn't have a chance. I've been kind of bouncing around between different genre and I decided watching MASH right after Catch 22 would not probably be the best.
Have you never seen MASH, the movie?
I have never seen it all the way through. I'm sure I've seen bits and pieces of it. But,
it's a great movie.
I mean, at the time that the TV show was on, I think I was a little bit disappointed in the movie because it's just not quite the same tone.
Oh, yeah. No, the movie is dark. It's a dark, dark movie.
Yeah. Well, Catch 22 is pretty dark, too.
Yeah, MASH the movie, but it is a great movie. It really is, so.
Did I tell you I saw the November Man? The Pierce Brosnan movie?
I haven't seen it. It's on my list.
It's not great, but it's interesting. It's worthwhile. I mean, it's worth watching, like, if you just have, if you have a pretzel to eat, it's worth watching.
Is it a Pierce Brosnan paycheck movie?
No. Well, yeah, but no. I mean, he's the star of it. He's the legitimate star of the movie.
I understand, but this is like, you know. Like he's just getting a paycheck.
It doesn't quite sing to that level. It's not as good as, say, Copycat, but it's good.
It's on my list.
Yeah, it's like a C movie, I would say. Maybe C+. Okay, all right. So, on to Copycat. 1995.
95, $20 million budget, gross of $32 million. So, it made money.
Well, yeah, not a lot. And it's funny because I had a question at the end of the movie. I had a question about this was all set up with really good characters and the set up a sequel opportunity. And I wondered why they didn't do that. Like, what happened?
Well, I don't know. A $12 million gross in 95, that's a pretty good profit.
Yeah, some of that, though, was taken away with advertising. So you got to figure that in. Although you still get some of that back in video rentals and stuff.
Yeah.
Because in 1995, there was still such a thing.
Exactly.
So, yeah, no, I mean, it made a little bit of money. It wasn't a big hit, though.
You thought that, you think the Daryl Lee Combs, you think the end of the movie was a setup for another movie?
Oh, yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, we'll get there, but yeah, I mean, it didn't have to be, but it definitely, I thought it could have easily been a setup.
I don't disagree with you. It didn't occur to me. I just saw it as a creepy element of the closing of the movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, it definitely... This is interesting because this is a movie that could have gone a couple different directions. And it really, to me, it really rode the line well between, you know, a dark subject matter and actually, like, dark, shocking, and in some cases kind of brutal things that happen in the film with a not lighthearted, but with a, you know, there's plenty of banter and pretty much all of the main characters get a chance to be fleshed out a little bit. Like, cause you know, you end up having an affection, at least I did, for basically all of the main characters.
Yeah.
Except of course for the bad guy who's really not seen until the end.
Yeah, you don't really get it. Right. You don't get a feel for him. No, and you're right. There's good banter, but everybody has good lines and good chemistry. There's a lot of good dialogue. And And of course, this is a very young, relatively young Holly Hunter. And I mean, they're all, I mean, this is 95, so.
Yeah, well, for another thing I noticed is for a 20-year-old movie, it holds up really well.
Yeah, the technology kind of is the holdup in this, but yeah, I made the same observation that were it not for some of the technology issued, you know, the computer screens, the after dark fish tank screensaver.
Yeah, but like the movie, like the AVI file that they get is suitably creepy and suitably high tech for 1995.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that it actually works out fine. You know, you can, I mean, obviously she's using, you know, different, it's a different setup than you would have now. You know, you don't use the same kind of programs, but pretty much it's pretty cutting edge for 95.
Yeah. No, it was, I think at the time the movie came out, it was kind of ahead of the curve on the technology. And so yeah, I think that's right. What helped it to hold up. Have you seen pictures of the villain, Mr. Peter, since? Have you looked, like, have you gone to his IMDb page?
I have not.
Creepy. He is a creepy looking dude.
Well, in this movie, because I don't know, did you see the comments on IMDb about, like, what happened to this guy?
No.
Yeah, there is some banter back and forth between people on IMDb who probably know nothing about anything, but they're talking about, like, so what happened, you know? And then, you know, he's actually worked pretty steadily, but...
Yeah, he's got a lot of stuff under his belt.
Yeah, but it's none of it is like, you know, he wasn't projected into superstardom, which I realize is, you know, that's an uncommon thing anyway. I mean, shoot, Dermot Mulroney isn't really, even though he's kind of a star or a person whose name you recognize, he isn't exactly a movie star, you know?
He's in a good amount of stuff, but yeah, you're right.
Now, of course, Sigourney Weaver was already a movie star, and Holly Hunter, if she wasn't already, because when was Broadcast News?
Oh,
wasn't
long
that her
before,
first big break? Yeah, so.
Long before 95.
Yeah, so she was a name brand person. And then Harry Connick Jr., this is the beginning of his career, right? His movie career.
Yeah.
Like he wouldn't be on Will and Grace for another 10 years or maybe 5 years. I don't even.
Well, you know, and he had that stint with, you know, like he was in Will Smith for Independence Day.
Oh, that's true. That's in the movie I haven't seen since it came out, I don't think. Like, I wonder if it even holds up.
It does. It holds up. I mean, it's got some issues, clearly, but I'm not a big Jeff Goldblum fan, so it's hard. It's hard to watch it because I have a hard time sitting through Jeff Goldblum and his incredulity sometimes. That feigned incredulity that is just that faked. Like, okay, you're just smart, just spit it out and talk.
Yeah. Jeff Goldblum is an interesting cat.
Yeah, because so Independence Day was 96, so that was the next year.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, so this would have been... right about that same time. So was this his first movie?
I don't know. Let's look. I possess the technology. Harry Connick Jr. IMDb.
And I guess what I was trying to say about the technology in the movie is that everything they do technology-wise in the movie, you could see how you would replace just the program names now. I mean, everything they do, you could do now. But you could see how it would be done. It's not like you're looking at some kind of War Games kind of level of technology.
Right. No. Yeah. Easily you could see it happening. No, actually, his first movie was 1990, Memphis Belle.
Oh, okay.
And then he was in Little Man Tate.
Okay, I haven't seen either of those movies.
Really? Oh, Little Man Tate was Jodie Foster, right?
I think she directed that, right?
She was in it too.
Yeah.
Yes, she directed it. So this is Harry Connick Jr.'s third movie, but you know, Travis made the observation. They really made Harry Connick Jr. like what they really uglied him up good.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Okay, so shall we dive into the plot?
Yeah.
All right. The plot starts with
I'm going to interrupt you already. By the way, I could very easily have seen Harry Connick Jr. being played by Woody Harrelson in this role.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this is a movie where, well, we're going to get at the very end. I have an observation of why this didn't become a bigger movie or become have a sequel. But, you know, Harry Connick Jr. isn't on the screen for very long. He's kind of a Hannibal Lecter character in this movie.
Yeah.
So, and then that works out well, you know, because the time he gets, he just chews up the scenery, but it's effective. So the movie opens with Dr. Helen Hudson, played by Sigourney Weaver, giving a lecture on criminal psychology at a local university. She is an expert on serial killers. And after doing a nice little speech, she is then cornered in the bathroom by one of her previous subjects, Daryl Lee Cullum, Harry Connick Jr., who ends up killing a police officer and afterward brutally attacks her, but...
What are you doing with my gun? Huh? How'd you get my gun? What are you doing in the ladies' room? Are you spying on those girls again? Hey, I'll tell you something right now. Hey! Don't you look pretty up there, officer? Hey, you know what I want to know? I need you to help me out on this, Dr. Hudson, because you're the expert now. How would a fart knocker like me take out a dumb guy like this, huh? Would you stick him? Huh? Would you shoot him? Stick him or shoot him? Shoot him, stick him. I can't decide. I can't decide. But I think I'm just going to go ahead on and do both. Woo! I see it. Blooded up my knife, you dog. I hate cops. Hey, Dr. Hudson. What do you say, man, you have a little fun?
Where you see the killing of the police officer, you do not see what happens to her. Anyway, yeah, so I think it was an effective choice to show, because they never even describe what happens to her. Just something bad happens to her.
Which is, I think, exactly what you want. I think had you gone into the details, it would have actually made the story less interesting. This way, you're allowed to put into your brain and kind of terrorize yourself with what might have happened.
Yeah.
Now, did you get the impression from the latter part of the movie that the attack was a direct relation from her testifying against him earlier?
Yeah, it had to have been, yes.
Okay, and that's what I got too. But the movie it's not real clear about that. They just kind of allude to it in some footage.
Yeah, just enough to establish where she is. You know, she is an expert on serial killers. She has made a lot of money because she's got this great apartment. And yet, because of this attack on her, she is, as Wikipedia calls it, severely agoraphobic. And she's basically conducting her entire life from behind a computer screen and living in this apartment, assisted by her friend Andy, played by John Rothman.
Yeah, a very nice condo with a very long hallway with no other units attached.
I don't know. Again, it's San Francisco, so who knows how that whole thing works. It seems like she has the whole building to herself.
Kind of.
But I like, you know, I don't know. Have you ever dealt with agoraphobia, personally?
No.
Yeah, okay, so I have, and I like the way they dealt with it in this movie. They didn't go quite, I mean, you know, it's a little bit over dramatic, I think, at least from what I experienced, because more likely what would happen was when she opened her door to get the paper, and the paper was, like, thrown down the hall instead of in front of her door, and she had to kind of struggle to go and, like, crawl her way down the hall and fetch it with a broom, and it was all sort of dramatic. Well, In my case, it would have been, although mine wasn't quite as severe, obviously, it would have been like, okay, you know, stupid. Why can't I just go out and get this paper? And it would be that sort of thing. It would be like hemming and hawing at the doorway. It wouldn't be physically collapsing necessarily. But how are you going to show that on screen? So I thought that was actually pretty well done without being, you know, like Vertigo, Alfred Hitchcock, you know, like making it super dramatic.
Well, they kind of did make that super dramatic Hitchcockian camera angle wobbly lens thing.
Well, but they didn't project the spinning spiral thing in the background or anything.
There was no Mel Brooks falling, crying, Mama, Dada. So.
Well, except that, you know, that was a direct, I mean, in Vertigo, they did that spinning thing too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, by the way, have you seen Vertigo?
Not in a million years.
I will need to do Vertigo at some point because, as it turns out, I hate that movie.
You hate it?
All of my love for Alfred Hitchcock in Psycho, all of that love I have the same hatred for Vertigo. I watched it recently, and it's a beautiful movie, but it is not a nice movie. It's not a great movie. I don't think I think it's AFI's like number one movie now or something. And that is crap. Well, anyway, yeah. So we'll have to watch Vertigo sometime. If you're up for it, I'd be happy to do it.
Oh yeah, no. We need to do all the Hitchcocks. I mean, I love Hitchcock. I mean, I don't have a particular favorite per se.
Oh, I do.
I know you do. I mean, I really like Dial M for Murder, I gotta say. Yeah, no, we gotta go through the Hitchcock. Again, not all in a row, but we definitely should add some Hitchcock. But no, I'm happy to do Vertigo.
Okay, yeah, we'll have to, because I have thoughts.
Because I don't remember hating it, so.
Yeah, well, we'll get to it. I'm interested to see. I mean, obviously, I kind of set you up because now you know I hate it. But it would be interesting to see what you think of it.
Yeah, no, but I'm pretty easily divorced of your opinion because, you know, the whole parallax view thing. So I'm easily, you know, I know that you and I have some pretty divergent views on movies, and that doesn't make me indict your ability to like the same movies I do, because I mean, clearly, like on this movie, we agree. I think this is a great movie. This is an A movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, I think it's probably an A- for me.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's an A+. I'm just saying it's in the A range. You know, it's a solid 9.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, it's a 20-year-old movie, a thriller that holds up.
Yeah, and it's 2 hours long, but it's well paced.
I agree. Yeah, I was happy about that too.
This movie doesn't. I mean, there is some downtime, and there's some interesting plot choices that I question, but you know, we'll get there.
Yeah. So, okay. So shall we get back into Copycat yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So now we have, this is what, 3 years later after the attack. Yeah. We have Helen, who is severely agoraphobic, and you know, she basically doesn't go outside of her apartment.
Right.
And then we cut to meeting Inspector MJ Monahan, played by Holly Hunter, and her partner, Ruben Getz, played by Dermot Mulroney. And she's the veteran and he's the rookie, and they're doing firearms training. And they spend a great deal of focus, at least, on her ability to shoot the brachial nerve in the shoulder, which I had to, like, I put in my notes that, hold on, that's not a thing. Certainly not now, it's not a thing. It, you know, I mean, I see it as a plot device that is actually, you know, it pays off and everything about how in a very specific set of circumstances where someone has a hostage and you have the opportunity to shoot them in the shoulder of their gun hand, you can hit the brachial nerve, they'll drop the gun, and then you have a time to rescue the hostage.
No, it's actually used twice in the movie.
It's talked about 3 times, yes.
Yes, but it's used twice.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no, actually, I'm sorry. It's talked about 4 times in the movie, but yeah, used twice. So, after we have this nice banter, it's setting up the relationship between Monahan and Ruben. We also end up meeting MJ's old boyfriend, who's also a detective. He's Inspector Nicotelli.
Nico,
played by Will Patton, and he and Ruben trade barbs because Nico is a old school cop, and Ruben is a young guy who dresses stylishly and has newfangled ideas.
And eats funny food.
Yes, yes. He eats sushi instead of cheeseburgers. which makes him already suspect. And they're in San Francisco, by the way. That's an important part of this thing. So now we have a series of murders in San Francisco, and we see MJ and Ruben working a crime scene. And this is a nice scene when they go to the crime scene, because it establishes MJ as the sassy pro who's, you know, she's really good at her job. And that's important because you have to trust her in this movie.
Yeah. And she makes a nice little quip at the house, you know, that she asked the guys how long they were there before the CSI showed up, which is funny because at that point CSI didn't really exist.
Well, the CSI show didn't exist, but yeah, they were
right. But yeah. The concept was new.
Yep. No, it's great. I mean, like I said, this is probably pretty cutting edge from a technical level in 1995.
Right.
So they're investigating this third homicide that is probably the work of a serial killer, but nobody, especially their boss, wants to admit it. Especially since their boss worked on the Zodiac killings, which, of course, were never solved.
Well, she actually quips, didn't he die of old age, sir?
Yeah, exactly. So,
which is hilarious. So it gives you a sense of her demeanor, and she has a lot of great quips and one-lines in the whole movie, by the way.
Oh yeah, no, she did. But she also, you know, it doesn't sell out her boss as like this could have been a thing where she's the smartest person in any room. Because there is a tension because she ends up working with Helen and they don't want anyone, you know, they don't want anybody working with Helen. And MJ's response is, well, she's dealt with lots of serial killers. We haven't dealt with any. And then that's where her boss is. Why? I was on Zodiac. Like, yeah, well.
Yeah. She rides that line of being insubordinate and disrespectful and yet completely compliant within the rules.
Yeah, I mean, I see her as being irreverent without being insubordinate.
No, she's sometimes, I don't know, sometimes she's a little bit.
Well, actually, she is actually an insubordinate, but yeah, I see her more as irreverent instead of, like, unprofessional.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, she seems highly professional, but also the only really dated part of this is, like, he calls her a pushy broad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. See, it's interesting because there's still remnants of that. But yeah, 20 years later.
Yeah.
Helen ends up reading about the killings in the paper. And so she keeps calling into the police with tips, which just serves only to make her look like a nut.
Let me let you talk to the lead inspector on that case. All right. Hold on a second. MJ, we got deep throat again.
How many calls does that make, Patch?
Makes 3 today. 14 total.
Mm. Phone company set up on our Centrex yet?
Yeah, this morning.
Have Gigi put a tracer on her ass?
I'll see if it'll work.
Inspector Monahan speaking, homicide.
Yes, hello.
Ask her about the moon bike.
I'm really interested in your ideas. The moon bike. What? What is that?
Moon bike? I said a lunar cycle. I think he might be on a lunar cycle because the first two murders were 28 days apart. You still want to crack jokes?
No, ma'am, this is no joke, and neither is tying up police lines with crank calls.
Are you calling me a crank?
Do you have any evidence to report, ma'am? Do you know any of the victims?
I think this is number 3.
That is an opinion, not evidence. May I ask who I'm speaking with? Ah.
And this establishes Helen as maybe she's a nut, but she does know what she's talking about. And MJ might be a cynical police inspector, but she also knows expertise when she sees it. So MJ has the call traced. She finds out who's calling, does a little research about her, and then she and Ruben go to visit Helen. And Helen has a couple of problems. Agoraphobia is one, but also being 24/7 alcoholic and pill popper doesn't help anything.
Yeah, I mean, she downs the brandy in this movie like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah. So, and, you know, it becomes an issue where, you know, we don't know if Helen is imagining these things because of her, you know, panic and agoraphobia, or whether, you know, somebody is really breaking into her apartment.
And they do a good point of being able to not quite allow you to figure out that either. I mean, exactly. You really don't know if it's her or not. I mean, because she could just be crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And she says so herself. You know, she doesn't report all these things that are happening to her because she thinks they are probably just her. So she is kind of reluctant to help out. And but it turns out they throw some files her way and she comes up with some astute observations. And so then all of a sudden she's into the hunt. But then she finds herself being tracked also. And that's where she gets the creepy AVI files. And there's one line in the movie that I won't put a clip in, I don't think. But, you know, Dermot Mulroney sits at the computer and starts, you know, tapping out all these things. Even though Helen establishes herself as the computer expert in the room. He's like the young guy, so he knows about computers. But when asked how, he's like, oh, I spent a lot of time in arcades. I went through a lot of quarters. Like, no, you don't know how to work computers from spending time in video games, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, that's fine. That was the only thing that didn't ring true as far as I was concerned. And we don't know whether Helen is delusional as well as being agoraphobic. But, you know, that's when... As the murders continue, Helen realizes that the elusive assailant draws inspiration from notorious serial killers, including Albert DeSalvo, the Hillside Strangler, David Berkowitz, Jeffrey Dahmer, and Ted Bundy. So the murderer then begins contacting and even stalking Helen, and so she and MJ both realize that he is actually after them at the same time. So much so that he ends up leaving Helen a note at a crime scene. And that is also... I believe, when she finds the book in her bed, the book written by Cullum, the guy she put in jail, Harry Connick Jr., with a severed finger and ants in it.
Yeah.
And that's pretty creepy.
Yeah, although I don't know if the ants would go for a finger.
Well, it worked out to be nice and creepy.
And they look like carpenter ants, by the way.
Well, again, I don't know... I mean, like I said, it just serves to be creepy as far as I'm concerned.
Now, they were big ass ants. They look like carpenter ants because in Oregon we have what they call scent ants or sugar ants. They're these teeny tiny little ants that get everywhere. But we don't have big ants here, so.
Oh, well. And that's when we have a nice little scene where it kind of people put their cards on the table as far as Helen says that, oh yeah, he's probably broken into her apartment before. And, well, why didn't she report it? Well, because I didn't know if it was just me or not, you know. And then because Ruben and MJ keep kind of trying to explain away what she sees as being super sinister. And she's like, stop patronizing me.
You must think I'm a complete moron.
Look, until we know any different, I say the guy's just a junkie. He's out looking for another...
A junkie in a full-on SWAT suit? Come on, Reuben, you're such a lousy liar.
And are you sure nothing's missing?
Yes, there is something missing. The cop who was supposed to be at my door. Where the hell was he?
Well, the guy screwed up. I'm really sorry, but that's not the point.
That is the point. You dragged me into this. You're supposed to be protecting me, and that man is in and out of here.
What are you doing?
I'm checking the bed.
Please,
okay? That man is in and out of here whenever he feels like it.
We got here as quickly as we could, okay? Fortunately, we got here before there
was... Yes, why is that? Why did you come to my rescue so fortuitously, huh? What? There was a note, wasn't there, at the gas station. I was right. What did it say?
You think the guy's been in here before? You said he comes in whenever he feels like it?
I don't know, but somebody came and messed with my clothes. And they put this red suit of mine on the bed.
Anything special about it?
It was the one that I was wearing at the lecture hall.
Oh. Why didn't you report this?
I didn't know. I thought it was me, you know. I'd just taken a lot of pills and I'd been drinking and I just didn't know, okay? I wasn't sure then, but I am sure now. So please stop pretending to me that it's a burglar.
okay? I think the man who has killed 5 women in this city was just in your apartment. I don't know why, but I do know he has a plan, and you seem to be a part of it. The truth is, he's very, very smart, and he's way ahead of us. And I take it your moving is out of the question. So all I know to do is run the usual checks, change your locks, tighten up your security, and pray. Feel better?
No. But I appreciate your candor.
Which I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll be straight out with you.
Yeah. And in the note to Kellen, in the note to Helen left at the crime scene, they quote the police song Murder by Numbers. But then they bring the note to Helen to kind of decipher. And did it strike you that Helen was trying to decipher the lyrics to a song that she didn't realize were the lyrics to a song?
Well, except that, okay, there were lyrics to a song, but it wasn't, I don't believe it was the song in continuity. It was specific passages from the song that were pulled out to be put in the note.
Oh, I don't know. I think it was pretty much line by line, the words to the song.
No, do you?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'm not that familiar, and, I'm a police fan, but I'm not that familiar with that song to know. So I just assumed that it was certain parts of the song that were elicited to be able to be personalized and pointed towards Helen.
I'm pretty sure it's just the first line or two of the actual song, which, by the way, this is the theme song in our episode. Yeah. Because they play most of the theme song or all of the theme song at the end of the movie during the credits.
I did like the smoke-filled briefing room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And with the commissioner coming in and everything. That was a nice... The
purple haze.
Yeah. But, which, you know, is... I'm sure that was a thing back in the day. But, yeah. So, I mean, when I was listening to her talk about, you know, give her assessment of these lines in the letter written to her, except that were police lyrics, I'm like, you know, I can just see her saying, you know, on a dark desert highway, well, he's seeing his lack of friends as a desert, and then stab it with their stealing knives, but they just can't kill the beast. Well, the beast refers to Aleister Crowley, who is a noted Satanist, and you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. That's because his mental illness will not leave him. And it's like, stop it. Yes, this was not written by a serial killer. Yes, this is written by a guy named Gordon, who is a bassist in a band. So, that took me out of it just a little bit. But again, the performances are so good, and the pace is, works so well that... Yeah, absolutely. Because this is a movie you can watch. Like, I was watching it critically, and I thought it was fine. It was great. But even if I was watching it because it happened to be on TV, that would be great for that, too.
Because, again, it's a great, dark movie. Yeah.
Then they realize that, okay, he's not only is he copying these different serial killers as far as the scenes he is presenting them with his kills, but he's also doing it in a specific order. And that's the order that she listed him in the presentation that she did the day she was attacked by Cullum, which, as we find out, he was in the audience for. He was one of the people standing up, the men between 20 and 35 who were white.
Yeah.
So then they decide they're going to have to consult Cullum because it was his book that was left, like, autographed to her.
Yeah. So they do a Skype before there's a Skype.
Yeah, which is actually pretty great. It works out rather well.
Yeah.
And then I want you to speak into this microphone.
She going to see me through that? How's she gonna hear me?
You just speak into the microphone.
Hello? Hey, Doc.
This is Inspector Monahan. I'll be speaking for Dr. Hudson.
I'm hanging up. I ain't talking to no cop.
Or you Dr. lied Hudson to me. Just received your book. Do you know anything about it?
Oh, yeah. I surely do, but that's all I'm saying until that foxy lady gets on the horn. Put her on.
Hello, Mr. Cullum.
Doc, I've been expecting your call. Hey, from one author to another, how'd you like my book?
What do you know about the man who delivered it?
Peter Curtin. What about him?
Peter Curtin?
Oh, yeah.
Peter Curtin is the name of a serial killer from the 30s in Germany.
I'll be damned. He took that man's name. He bothering you?
He broke into my apartment to leave your book.
Kind of a hand delivery, huh?
Did you put him up to it?
Doc, this Curtin guy, he's been writing me all these letters. I figured he owed me a couple of favors. So I sent the book with him to your house. I didn't think he'd break in, though. Yeah, steer clear of that son of a gun. He's a freak. He told me he's gonna send me $500 for some of my, my spirit. He said that he could make me immortal if he had some of my spirit. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of embarrassing. I don't really want to say it right out in front of a lady and all.
Well, I think I know what you're referring to. So what did you do about it?
I took some of that liquid soap, put in one of them sandwich baggies with a message from Jesus, telling him to mend his ways.
How are you going to contact Curtin?
This buddy of mine got paroled a couple of days ago. I figured I'd just send a baggie with him. Curtin was going to hook up with him.
Do you know when and where?
All depends, Doc.
Depends on what?
You see, it gets awful lonesome in here, Doc. I think about you all the time. A personal token would be nice. Let's see. Something feminine. Something lacy. Something really, something pretty. I got it. Send me some of your squirrel covers.
I beg your pardon?
I beg your pardon? Your panties. You wear them, don't you? That's what I want.
Jesus
Christ. Look, I want them autographed to me personally. Darryl Lee Cullum, deal?
That's a promise.
All right, my buddy's gonna meet up with Peter Curtin tonight at 10 o'clock at the Denver Meatpacking Company.
And he agrees to help them if she will provide him with some squirrel covers. By the way, the trivia in this says that the director asked Harry Connick Jr. to come up with a slang term for ladies' panties, which he ended up using squirrel covers as an expression he heard his brother-in-law use.
Oh, jeez.
So, anyway. Good times. with his bad teeth and his redneck
drawl.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, again, he's too
nice. No, he sold it. He sold it. I mean, he was a good choice for this.
Yeah, I think so too. So he knows the serial killer in question as a guy named Peter Curtin, who, of course, Peter Curtin was a serial killer from Germany in the 1930s.
Well, and it's also a bit of a factual error in the movie because I think Curtin was earlier in 1915, but regardless.
Oh, okay, maybe. Yeah, he was the vampire of Dusseldorf, right?
Yeah.
But, it's interesting because to take a slight tangent here, I've been listening to, having strange amounts of time to listen to things like lots of podcasts. I've been going through the back catalog of the Last Podcast on the Left, which consists of three comedians who talk about serial killers, Satanism, horror movies, that kind of thing. And they actually the show is really entertaining, but it is super irreverent. And so at the first time I heard one of their episodes, I was kind of put off because they're making all these sort of like racist jokes and stuff, like typical comedian stuff, nothing super offensive, but it turns out they actually read up and do research because this is stuff that they're interested in. So I've been listening to a lot of serial killer talk. And then, so watching this movie, it actually, it actually, you know, fit in rather nicely. And there weren't any factual errors that I could see in the serial killer part of this movie. There is a really good set. They have two episodes, actually, on black serial killers, because that's the one thing that's kind of a myth, that all serial killers are white males between, you know, 20 and 45 or 35 or whatever. Turns out there are plenty of black serial killers. They just don't get nearly the press. So anyway, unfortunately, at this point, Cullum says, okay, yeah, you know, I just used a friend of mine to get stuff to Peter Curtin, and I know where they're going to be. They're going to meet with him tonight or tomorrow night or whatever. So MJ is like, yeah, we got him. Unfortunately, during this whole thing, Nico, who again is sort of a attention, is MJ's ex-boyfriend, he's been working this case in Chinatown. Well, this is the night of the big bust from the Chinatown case, so their room is all full of arrestees or witnesses from the Chinatown thing, which again, they don't explain, which is just fine. And Nico, unfortunately, leaves the keys to his desk drawer in the lock, and this is where his gun is. So one of the Asian arrestees ends up taking his gun and then takes Ruben hostage, which MJ ends up being able to shoot him in the brachial nerve, which makes him drop the gun, which is great. Except that, of course, he just uses the other hand to pick up the gun and shoots Ruben dead in a really brutal manner.
It really was kind of jarring and unexpected.
Yeah, it was super brutal.
Yeah. Also, shot over a donut. Is that satire or what?
Yeah, well. Yeah, so now you feel bad for Nico because he just made this little mistake. But now we got a cop who's dead. And also, it blew the chance to catch Peter Curtin. Yeah, so it's bad news. So, even though she's been forbidden from doing so, MJ goes back to Helen and they talk. And then Andy is killed.
Yeah.
In a manner reminiscent of Jeffrey Dahmer.
Kind of.
So that's when they, through good police work, deduce the killer to be Peter Foley, William McNamara, who is, if nothing else, a Tom Cruise-looking dude.
That's where MJ gets the Pine Sol lady, gives her makes the appearance, giving her the date of all the VINs, VW, Volkswagen info.
Yeah. The Pine Sol lady?
Yeah, if you haven't noticed, the Pine Sol lady, the African-American lady who does the Pine Sol ads, the sassy lady, she's the one who gives MJ the folder full of the VW info. Of all the gold Volkswagen bugs in San Francisco, which must number in the thousands, by the way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In San Francisco, especially.
Exactly.
Yeah, gold or tan or brown. I mean, you know.
Or beige.
Yes, this. It has to be. You're right. It's thousands. But, you know, again, they find the guy who matches the profile. So they go to his house.
Well, and Andy's pal identifies Peter by DMV records.
Andy's pal does?
Yeah, because he's like, that's the guy at the bar.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So they have confirmation. So that's where they go to do the takedown at Foley's house. And does Foley live with his mother or is that his wife?
You know, I think it was his girlfriend. But it's never made real clear.
Yeah. But anyway, so they end up going to try to take him down, and they set the house on, or he sets the house on fire, presumably. Luckily, no cops are killed, but they assume he's dead in the house. But then they discover that he kidnapped Helen. And he ends up taking Helen back to the scene of the restroom at the lecture hall, where he is going to duplicate the the Cullum attack on the police officer. And presumably whatever horrible things happen to Helen, he's going to do as well.
Yeah, he actually starts kind of reproducing that with the scalpel to her buttons.
Yeah.
Which and also leads to another question. Like, if something horrific happened like that, would you have kept the dress?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
And had the buttons been, like, pulled off surgically, would you have actually gone to the trouble of having the dress repaired? I mean, no. After it was evidence in the trial, I would not have wanted it back.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely not. Yeah. It would have been better if he had just found a dress that matched it. But
anyway. Yeah. Well, but then he couldn't have put it on her bed.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, it all worked out for this story, but yeah, it is a little hole in that part of the plot.
Yeah.
Also, both times she was basically bound and hanging from pretty much a noose above this toilet. I guess because she could just barely touch the toilet seat with her feet, that kept her from choking to death.
Asphyxiating.
Yeah, because it looks like she's just minutes away from asphyxiating. So,
right.
But, anyway, it works out just fine. And that's, then we have a little bit of back and forth between them. And then MJ comes and ends up having to go in on her own. So these are all just pretty run-of-the-mill conventions, but it's really, again, it's really well acted. And Sigourney Weaver does a great job, and William McNamara as Peter Foley does a good job. And then they have the final scene where, well, not the final scene, but nearly the final scene, the climactic scene, where she ends up on the roof, and her agoraphobia kicks in, and she finds herself cornered, so she turns to face Foley. But just as he's about to kill her, MJ shoots him in the brachial nerve, which gives him a chance to surrender. But then he doesn't, so she ends up shooting him dead.
By the way, pretty good shot for how far away that really is.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, no, great shot. And she's also, she herself is wounded, MJ is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Yeah. But, and that, that could have been just the end of the movie. But it's not. They throw in a little dun-dun-dun at the end, where we have a clip that I will put in, where Daryl Lee...
Did you notice a little continuity error, though, with Foley?
Huh.
When she shoots him, he's facing Helen. And so when she shoots him, you see her, shoot him in the back of the head, and he falls forward. Except then when Helen walks past him, he's laying on his back.
Huh.
And she kicks the gun out of his hand.
Well, okay. Yeah, I didn't notice that.
At least that's what I recall, and I could be wrong.
No, it's I can't imagine you're being wrong. So, but yeah, that didn't take me out of it.
I'm flattered by your confidence in my infallibility, but I'm wrong a lot.
No, I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt is what I'm doing.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're not infallible, that's for sure. Yeah, so then we end up with Daryl Lee Cullum writing to another sort of probably serial killer pen pal information on also trying to get back at Helen.
Dear Conrad, thank you for your letter. Well, praise the Lord. I know you must be so happy that he chose to spare Dr. Hudson. The big guy moves in mysterious ways, don't he? Now, it just so happens I'm awaiting the arrival of a pair of genuine Helen Hudson undies, signed personal to me. A real collector's item, I'm sure you'll know. They're yours, but don't forget, a disciple must be strong if he is to succeed where others fail. Peter strayed from the path, and the Lord smote him good. So keep it simple. Then glory is yours, and vengeance is mine, as the good book says. I know you'll get my meaning. Happy hunting, partner. Daryl Lee Cullum.
Yeah, so this, I thought it was right for a sequel, because Helen is a good character, and MJ is a great character, and Cullum is super creepy. So
yeah.
My question was, what happened? But I think I figured it out. This is not through great detective work, but just so happens that this came out the same year as the movie Seven. And so it's like the same sort of movie as Seven. But Seven, of course, is super dark and atmospheric. And
Seven took all the air out of the room.
Yeah, I mean, Seven had the more name-brand actors, actually. So,
yeah.
You know, and I don't know which one came out first on the calendar. I'm guessing this one probably did. But, yeah, this just wasn't quite in Seven's league. You know, Seven is something of a masterpiece. And this is just a good movie. So in comparison, it doesn't come off quite as good. So, you know, that's the disadvantage you get. Maybe Deep Impact is a better movie, but, what was the Armageddon came out the same year. So
Copycat came out in 95, Seven came out in 95.
Oh yeah. No, they came out the same year. I know that for sure. So
September 22nd for Seven, October 27th for Copycat.
Okay. Yeah, then even worse for them.
Yeah.
Because then it's a direct comparison. Although Roger Ebert gave Seven 4 stars, but gave Copycat 3.5 stars.
Yeah.
Because it really
is a well-acted
movie.
No, it's great actors, great acted, great story, great plot, good pacing. I mean, it holds up pretty well. You know, all those things make it a great movie. And it's a great movie on rewatch. You can watch it a couple times and get more stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you go back and watch it and you can actually see, like, Peter Foley throughout the movie.
Exactly.
Because you see him at the convention. You see him at the police station.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I thought this did a bang-up job. So.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yep. So I definitely give it a recommend, and it definitely stands the test of time.
Yeah.
So any final thoughts on Copycat?
No, I think it's one of those great words fail me at this point. No, I like it. I like it on rewatch. I haven't watched it in a while. It was nice to see it again. It's still suspenseful, even knowing what's coming. This is a great, this is one of those good popcorn movies, I thought.
Yep, I agree. Not in a Creepy Way, we'll be back after these messages.
You don't have to be lonely, fireslonely.com.
As always, we'd love feedback. Call us on our feedback hotline at 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. And we're back. Welcome. This is Eric.
This is Drew.
And we're going to do a little timely housekeeping, since tonight we're actually recording a Halloween episode that won't be out until Halloween. And right now it's the beginning part, or near the middle of August. So.
Yeah. And it's been, what, almost a month since we've talked to each other?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Life got in the way. My father-in-law passed away last week, and my wife had flown down there, so I was a single dad. And it required lots of juggling of my schedule, which forced me not to podcast, and also to clean out all of the, and put out all of the recordings I had. So as of this week, the cupboard was bare.
Did that make you feel anxious?
Just a little bit. Because if something had come up, the only thing I had even possible would be our Casablanca podcast. But our observations on that movie were fine. The sound quality is not great, but we both suffered from lack of historical understanding of the government at the time in non-occupied colonial France. So anyway.
Well, I'm no more educated now. So.
No, we'll have to talk about Casablanca again at some future date. because I mean, I still want to, because it's still one of my favorite movies ever. But yeah, with more knowledge now that I did a whole bunch of research trying to resuscitate the whole thing, I was actually going to drop in part of a college lecture on occupied France. The problem is it's a long topic.
It would have been funny if you had just kind of ADR'd that one.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about it.
Every time I said something dumb, you could have just been, well, actually.
Well, I could have worked, I suppose. But no, it's, yeah. And of course, I didn't ADR Tiptoes either. I just struggled through.
That was, I listened to it. I listened to the whole thing all the way through. I have some thoughts about it.
Okay.
It was a little jarring at first, but I actually kind of, I got into it because it sounded like you were a crime victim testifying and you were trying to disguise your identity.
Yeah, well, yeah. I liken it to two prisoners talking through a some sort of ventilation duct in a prison. But
yeah. Also, I have to say, I have some friends. They are both very tall. In fact, I played volleyball with them, and they had a dwarf baby. And with no indication of dwarfism on either side of their family.
Oh, well, that's true. I think I met the child.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So. Excellent. So, yeah, so there you go. Puts the lie to the whole thought.
Yeah, but so it can happen.
Yeah, have you seen the movie, by the way?
I have not.
Yeah, it is remarkable. It's a remarkable movie.
Yeah, I was considering checking it out until I got to the part where the dude abandoned his baby. I think when I heard that, I was like, all right, I'm out. Nope. Not really interested in that kind of movie.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing. Anyway, sorry. So back to housekeeping. Any other thoughts on, you know, now that you've now listened to every episode we've ever done?
Yeah, I have. It's been so long. There was a movie. I don't even remember the movie you guys talked about. I just made a note where at the end of it, Jason talked about when he came out as gay, and I don't even remember how it came up, but I remember thinking, I think he really downplayed the significance of that, because he made it sound like it was no big deal. And I remember chatting with you about it. I think on part of a podcast that we decided to not record, about how brave I thought it was. So I thought he really didn't give himself enough credit for that that time in all of our lives. I'm glad he felt really supported, but it was a different world back then than it is now.
Yeah, so, oh, absolutely.
It's kind of hard to remember that.
Oh well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you're absolutely right, and you know. And until it happens, you don't know how it's going to go. So I can't imagine.
Right. So, yeah, I think he might not be giving himself enough credit for how brave he was during that period of his life.
Yeah. Well, now that he hears that, he'll get a sense of warmth and joy, or something.
That may or may not have been the same podcast you guys are talking about. Maya Rudolph. Does that sound right?
Well, we talked about Maya Rudolph in duets because she was in that, and she and her dad did the music for that movie.
Yeah, and the song Loving You is written about her, right?
The Minnie Riperton song?
The one with the high F?
Yeah. That's written about Maya Rudolph?
Yeah. I think so.
It seems like an older song than that. She's not very old, right? Are we talking about the same person?
I think it was written as she was born.
Oh, okay. So it's not a love song to another adult. It's a child song.
I believe so.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Wait, I just looked it up. The melody for Lovin' You was created as a distraction for her daughter, Maya Rudolph.
Oh, okay. So, okay. So not the lyrics, but the song itself.
That seems better.
It there's a lot of la 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 in there, so that makes sense. So who is her mom?
Minnie Riperton, right?
I did not know that. Okay, well, geez. So Bruce Rudolph and Minnie Riperton had a little baby Maya?
Wikipedia says Richard Rudolph.
Oh, I'm sorry. Richard Rudolph. Same as Bruce. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, interesting. Where'd I come up with Bruce? Oh, well. Here. You mean Richard Rudolph and Minnie Riperton had a little baby named Maya? Yeah, that's suitable.
Sorry, I should have made you say Bruce three more times before I corrected you.
Yeah, you should have. Or just let me do it. Yeah, that would have been fine. That's interesting. Yeah, you know, I thought our duets podcast was pretty great, and I learned part of the secret, and that is I'm not sure I think I interrupt Jason too much, because when I let him talk, it's great.
It helps when he's fired up about something.
Yeah, true. Yeah, no. But also, I think it's one of those ones I think I will point people to who just are curious what it's like, because of his observation when we talked about duets and how the one pair of the three pairs, one of the guys didn't even sing. So, you know, there should have been two singers. And Jason says, yes, if for no other reason, because the movie is called Duets, which I thought was pretty great.
It was a brilliant observation.
It was brilliant.
I was really surprised to hear that Andre Brower is in that. I love Andre Brower.
Oh, it's, you know, it's a great movie if you just skip all the parts that don't involve Paul Giamatti and Andre Brower. It's a little darker, but it's a great movie. And you know, going back and editing, taking like the clip for Gwyneth Paltrow, yeah, she wasn't good in that. Not at all. I was too nice, if anything.
Yeah, she's... It's easy to hate on her, though.
It's true. Yeah. No, and she's been good in other things, so.
Yeah, but she's, I don't know, she's just one of those inherently unlikable people.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to agree.
I mean, at the end of Seven, you feel bad for Brad Pitt, but do you really feel bad for her? not really.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm trying to think of other movies that she's been really good in. But, you know, other than the Royal Tenenbaums, which, you know, she wasn't actually playing a real person. So, and maybe this was as directed. Maybe Duets was just directed poorly. Who knows?
I have Oscar baggage, too, from Shakespeare in Love. I thought the movie was garbage.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. But turns out a lot of those Oscar-winning best films are not thought of well. At some point, Diane will come back and we will talk about the movie Crash.
I was actually thinking the other day, listening to the intro, we need another Diane episode.
We definitely do, yeah. Yep, we'll need to figure out how to make that happen.
Yeah, Shakespeare in Love beat out Elizabeth, which is a good movie. It beat out Life is Beautiful. Which is a good movie, hard to watch. It beat out Saving Private Ryan, and it beat out The Thin Red Line.
Yeah, and that just seems ridiculous. And what did Crash beat out?
Crash beat out Brokeback Mountain, right?
I think so. There's some other stuff in there that Crash beat out. I'm looking it up if you're not.
I am.
Oh, Crash.
Capote.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Munich. I really liked Munich.
Me too.
Good Night and Good Luck.
Oh, that was a good movie too, yeah. Hey, there's an article in The Guardian about It says, crash burned. Academy members reassess past Oscar decisions. Oh, also Driving Miss Daisy, apparently.
Oh, that's going way back.
Let's see. Yeah, oh, and they said that, what is it, Forrest Gump should have been... Should have been beaten by Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, but nobody actually watched Shawshank Redemption, right?
No, everybody loves Well, yeah, nobody watched it in the theaters, but it's one of the top voted movies of all time on IMDb.
Yeah, no, it's awesome, but yeah, nobody watched it until it was on TNT 800 million times, right?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe, yeah. And of course, people bring up Marissa Tomei for My Cousin Vinny because she beat Vanessa Redgrave, Judy Davis, Miranda Richardson, and Joe Plowright.
Is that the one where they think was it Jack Palance read the wrong name?
Oh, no, I didn't know that. That's hilarious. That would be great.
Yeah, there's a rumor like that. Like they opened the envelope and then he was supposed to read it, but he's so blind he couldn't actually see.
Oh, that would be hilarious. Well, because, you know, what was last year? To me, it looked like Meryl Streep just gave the Oscar to who she wanted to. Like, she didn't even open the envelope.
Oh, I assume they have all that kind of stuff loaded into the teleprompters now.
Yeah, I would hope so. Yeah. You know, a lot of movies, actually, just to meander around a little bit in housekeeping, I watched a ton of movies and listened to a ton of podcasts when I wasn't able to actually record podcasts. And I listened to about 30 episodes of The Last Podcast on the Left. So Serial Killers was kind of at the top of mind when Jason and I talked about Copycat last night. And I watched Catch 22. Have you seen that movie?
I have not.
It is well worth seeing. Everyone in the cast you have seen before. I mean, it's just chock full of stars. And it is dark. Like, you know, I mean, I kind of knew what the Catch-22 was. So that part of it wasn't surprising. But it's super dark.
That book is a go-to reference for my current boss.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, it's I might read the book.
When he's trying to counsel me about the futility of affecting change in people who may not want it.
Yeah. Well, it's the movie's what we're seeing. And what else did I watch? A ton of horror movies. And then some movies that we had talked about doing in the podcast. And when I watched them, I was like, I don't know if we're going to have anything to talk about. Like Thirst. Like, I thought Thirst was a good movie, but I'm not sure what we're going to have to talk about if we were going to talk about it.
I have not watched it again.
Yeah, it's good. It's just, I don't know. It's not as rich as, say, Three Extremes.
Yeah, my memory was it was an interesting kind of a take on vampirism. And it was before the vampires became trendy again.
Yeah, well, okay, then that makes sense. What else did I see? I watched Clute, which I thought was okay, but not as good as the Parallax View, which Jason didn't like as much, but that's okay. I still love that movie.
I have that. That's one of my next four recreation-only movies.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Hey, guess what I got in the mail today from Netflix? Oh, yeah, I'll make you guess.
Can I get a hint?
Yeah, it's a new movie.
Starring Captain America.
Nope, I actually watched Captain America too. It's a new movie, new movie, like out this week movie on DVD on Netflix at least. And it stars an actor that you're very fond of.
I'm going to need more help.
Let's see. It's part of a trilogy of novels, maybe only two of which have been published yet. It involves...
Have I read them?
I don't know. It involves a serial killer in Russia. And our hero is a detective, I believe.
I got nothing.
Child 44 with Thomas Hardy.
Oh. That's funny. I thought that was going to be like a little miniseries on TV.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe it will, but this is actually came out this week.
That sounded dark.
Yeah. The subject matter is dark because I think it's either very similar to the movie Citizen X, which is about the Andrei Chitilenko. I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong. The serial killer in Russia. Because it talks about how to catch a serial killer if you're working against your own government while you're doing it. Like, you can't admit there's a serial killer. And if the serial killer has ties to the Communist Party, then you definitely can't call anybody out who has those kind of ties. So.
Have you ever seen Gorky Park?
A long time ago. Yeah.
Very. I remember it being good.
Yeah, me too.
Like, with similar things.
Yes.
You know, trying to solve a crime, but having to work against the political machine as well.
Yeah, well.
Speaking of, I finished up True Detective Season 2.
Oh.
The final episode is on Sunday.
Yeah, and?
I liked it. My wife liked it even more.
Oh, wow, because I have not seen any of it. And it has been roundly panned.
Yeah, well, it's... Nothing like the first season.
So I hear, and I guess I don't want any spoilers, but I understand that they don't like have a horror / metaphysical element necessarily to it.
No, it's entirely different.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it must have been people were expecting way more out of it than they got. Although I'm constantly surprised by the fact that how many people actually didn't like the first season.
Yeah, that is surprising. I mean, the first season is definitely I'm not sure how to describe it. It's like a higher quality. You know, the first season really felt like something. It really felt like an 8-hour long movie, like a really high concept, well-crafted movie. And season two, I think, is just it's a pretty good version of a cop show.
Cool. Well, that's acceptable.
Like with a really nihilistic point of view.
Yeah. Well, that's that'll work. Okay. So I'll dive in. I haven't actually even watched the second season of Hannibal yet. Just that first episode.
Yeah, I also watched a few movies while I was on suspension, and one of them was Black Hat.
Oh,
the Michael Mann movie that bombed.
Yeah, is it any good?
And I really liked it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll have to talk about it because I almost bought it used the other day. Like, there was a buy one get one free thing at our mom and Journey and I were at the store, and I thought, well, I could buy a kid's movie and get free Black Hat if I wanted.
Yeah, I understand why people didn't like it, but I did. I mean, it's not the movie it looks like it is.
Okay. Interesting.
So, I was really surprised. It was... I thought it was very effective.
I actually watched a movie that I think I will just gift you because I have it, a physical copy of it. It's called Hell Ride, and it was produced by Quentin Tarantino, And one of the stars is Michael Madsen.
Of course it is.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's interesting. It's fun. It's a fun movie. It's not a great movie, but it's a fun movie.
Yeah, that reminds me, listening to you talk about a movie with Gary Oldman and Patricia Arquette in it made me think we should throw True Romance on the calendar at some point.
We should, because I remember watching that movie and thinking, meh. But I also remember, and I actually bought the movie, I have it, because so many people love that movie that I knew I was going to give it another chance, but I just haven't had a moment to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was back in the Christian Slater heyday.
We've never left.
Okay. What is
he Christian has just Slater made different did? Choices.
Yeah, what has Christian Slater done lately?
He was just in a TV show. Oh, he's on a TV show called Mr. Robot, which is getting really good reviews.
Oh, well, good. Good for him. I always remember liking him.
I think he has a very small part in it. But yeah, I also watched a movie, a couple movies, Big Eyes. That was really interesting. I recommend that.
Okay. That's Reese Witherspoon.
No, but the other movie I was going to mention is a Reese Witherspoon movie.
Oh, wait, hold, Amy Adams. Is Amy Adams in Big Eyes? Okay.
Yeah. It was, surprisingly good, actually. And Wild, which is the Reese Witherspoon movie, it was also good. It was kind of hard to sit through, but I thought it was interesting and well-crafted.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I should have taken more notes because I watched a lot of movies.
Yeah, well, we've had some life changes. My wife has switched jobs, so for the moment, she is in a much lower stress environment, which means she actually stays up and watches movies with me now.
Oh, cool. Well, she's certainly welcome to be on the podcast if she'd like.
good luck.
Okay, we always like that female point of view.
Yeah. What else happened while we were out?
I don't know. It seemed like a lot. Well, Jason grew a new voice.
That's right. Is that here to stay?
I think so, yeah. I don't really notice much of a difference, but he does.
I do. It's not bad. It's just different.
Huh, interesting.
I bought a song.
Yeah, so you directed me to that song, and Mom actually put it together, like, how you had that done. Because you didn't explain anything about it. You just said, hey, look at this.
Oh, yeah, because I think we were going to talk about it that night, and then we had to cancel.
Oh, okay. Well, no, tell the story.
So there's a movie podcast that I like to listen to called the Slash Filmcast. And the host of that is a dude named David Chen. Kind of an interesting guy. He has lots of hobbies. He directed a movie with Stephen Tobolowsky, which sounds like kind of fun, like a concert movie. But also he decided to make a EP of him playing pop songs on his cello. So he did a Kickstarter for that, and one of the reward levels was he would record any pop song you wanted and send you a video of it. And it was right around the time when I was really struggling what to get my wife for our 15th anniversary. So I thought, awesome, I'll buy her a song. And so I got that, I bought that reward on his Kickstarter. This project got funded very quickly. And so I told her about it and I let her pick out a song. And he was really cool about it because just based on the timing, he was trying to get his rewards out pretty quickly, but he was still targeting like end of September or October. So when I responded with what our song was, I told him it was for our anniversary. He actually inquired about when our anniversary was, late July. And I told him, you know, don't worry about it. We don't expect it then. But he did it right away, and he sent it to us by our anniversary.
Yeah, and it is awesome. So,
yeah, it turned out really well.
Yeah. Now, do you?
And my wife loved it, so it was a success.
Do you have the right to share it or not?
I think so.
Huh, that would be awesome. Yeah.
He told me I could download it to keep forever.
Sweet. Can you upload it to YouTube?
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not.
It's, I don't think I would.
Yeah, well.
I mean, he didn't put it on YouTube.
So. Yeah, well, no, because it was for you. But yeah, I mean, interesting. So, by the way, there is a little bit of loose connection with the movie Jason and I are talking about, that we talked about yesterday, that I'm including this part of the show in, and that is, do you know who else? An actor we've talked about at least once, you and I, who is a professional level concert cellist?
No.
That would be Dermot Mulroney.
Really?
Yep. Starring in the cast of Copycat, 1995 thriller. Which, by the way,
also Young Guns.
Yes, also The Gray.
Indeed.
Yeah. We should talk about Young Guns at some point too.
And Young Guns 2, when Jason had his candy attack on the way home.
There we go. Yeah. Yeah, good times. By the way, have you, just totally tangent, have you ever listened to Last Podcast on the Left?
No.
Okay, well, it's three comedians, one of whom, Henry Zebrowski, was in, oh, now I'm gonna forget the name of the movie. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, Quaaludes.
Oh, the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes, yes. He was in the Wolf of Wall Street. And he does other acting stuff, but he's, you know, not really a household name necessarily. But he and these two other comedians are, they're very funny, but they're super irreverent. And to the point of, you know, I mean, like, they do accents that some people could find offensive. And they talk about things like serial killers and sort of like horror geek kind of stuff, like cryptids and conspiracies. But like at the end of the show, they hail Satan. And so I found that initially kind of distasteful, not because I really care about or believe in Satan, but because I thought it was sort of juvenile. But the rest of the show has plenty of redeeming value. In fact, they actually do like plenty of research. So, you know, you can learn some stuff. And they have several series on like heavy hitter serial killers. Like there's a 2 or 3 part Ted Bundy arc they do. And they talk about, you know, David Berkowitz and Richard Ramirez and, you know, lots of others. So...
We have my wife met this woman, a fellow parent at our kids' gymnastics classes, and they have two kids who are like the exact same age as our two kids, the youngest of which are both named Emma, ours and theirs. So it's kind of funny. So they bonded, and we've hung out a couple times, and I was talking with the husband, and he's a pilot for UPS, and he was telling me what I thought was a really funny story. He didn't think it was as funny, but a woman like in line at the supermarket told him he had a real Ted Bundy look about him.
That's awesome.
I was like, well, that means you're really handsome.
Yeah,
that was what he was known for.
Yeah, charming, being
good looking, and charming.
Yeah, charming mother trucker too.
Yeah. So,
well, you know, at a certain point, we're all just one bonk in the head away from being, you know, having serious problems. So, which is, you know, again, this, because like I said, the first time or two I listened to these guys' podcast, I was like, oh, this is totally like juvenile sort of stuff with some funny voices and some comedy bits because they are professional comedians. But, you know, I thought, you know, I'll just, this will be one of those ones that I kind of hit once in a while. But for whatever reason, I just literally, I listened to like 30 episodes in the last week. Could not get enough.
I'll have to check it out.
So, yeah.
You were going to tell me about another podcast you listened to where they talked about engineers versus scientists.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I do. I still have that engineers versus scientists conversation. But this...
The redacted conversation?
Yeah. Yeah. This was just... It was... I smiled when I heard it because it was just kind of an offhanded comment. But this was an episode of... like stuff they don't want you to know, or one of those like how stuff works podcasts. And they were talking about internet shills. And one of the things they were talking about is AstroTurf, like the fake grassroots organizations that have like are just basically designed by big political action committees or big money, but they put a name on it that makes it look like it's just a group of like-minded citizens banding together for the forces of good. And they mentioned that when, especially topics, I can't remember exactly what they were talking about. I think stuff like mining, environmental sort of stuff, climate change sort of stuff. And they're talking about how, some of these AstroTurf organizations will claim to have, you know, this like group, you know, we basically have like just a grassroots campaign, organization of scientists who have, you know, are backing this, pro poisoning the earth plan, whatever they're doing. And when you dig into the organization, all of the people they refer to as scientists are either engineers or MDs. Neither of which real scientists consider scientists for purposes, of course, of saying, you know, yeah. Like, you know, like 9 out of 10 scientists agree that, or in our organization, but our organization of 1,000 scientists say that, you know, mountaintop removal is actually good for the environment or whatever. Yeah. None of those people have any like direct, you know, like climate scientists sort of background. So I thought that was kind of funny. Kind of a different take on the scientist versus engineer thought.
That is funny.
See, I had no idea these were even a thing.
It's like circus clowns and rodeo clowns. They just don't get along.
It is. Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of which, I have yet to hear any interview with Bobcat Goldthwait recently that I just do not fall in love with that guy. he is so funny. Yeah. And the fact that he, you know, he has a hard time getting away from that original character he portrayed, you know, the angry, screechy guy.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, anyway, it's very funny. And I don't know, have you seen some of his movies besides Shakes the Clown?
I have not.
I have not seen American Dad, but, no, it's not American Dad. Is it World's Best Dad? But God Bless America is really interesting and kind of subversive. And of course I have not seen, but I have heard a lot about the movie Sleeping Dogs Lie, which he refers to as a relationship comedy with a tiny bit of bestiality.
Oh, I think I have seen that one.
Do you remember it fondly? What's it?
No. No, I mean, it's, I think describing what the premise of the movie is a lot funnier than sitting through the movie.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. So.
I don't think I knew that was a Bobcat Goldthwait movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Pretty sure he wrote it too. Oh,
he wasn't in it, right?
I don't think so. No. Yeah, he's not in God Bless America either, but Joel Murray is. And let me tell you, it's pretty great. And again, like I said, it's really sort of like dark and weird, but good. Anyway, so any other housekeeping that you can think of?
I don't think so. I'm glad we transitioned into Bobcat Goldthwait real quick, because I was probably about to start to say really rude stuff about scientists.
Oh, no, go, please do. So, I want to hear how to fuel the scientist versus engineers thing, because...
No, you saved me. you saved me from being a giant asshole again.
Well, it's...
So that I don't have to text you later and be like, maybe I don't want that part broadcast.
Yeah, well, it's... And, you know, it's the same thing. I mean, dispatch, police dispatchers versus fire dispatchers. I'm sure it's cab drivers versus cab dispatchers. It's all, yeah.
And they all hate Uber drivers.
Exactly. Yeah. Why not? Uber's the devil. Yep. You just need more Airbnb bad experiences, but in the Uber camp to squash Uber.
Yeah, I feel really old. It sounds really scary.
Yeah, it sounds totally scary. But then again, you know, I don't know. That's at a certain point, you just have to make a choice to give up your personal safety. Like anytime you get on a plane, that's kind of how I feel. It's like, yeah, you know, nothing I can do. I mean, once I'm on the board of the plane, buckle up, and that's as much as I can do.
I think you really might like True Detective Season 2.
Okay. Okay, then. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages, or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.